to our presentation, which shows a picture of the Islander and the Independence. So far, we have 27 participants online. It's slightly after 9 o'clock, but quite a few people have joined in the last 2 or 3 minutes. So I think we'll wait another couple of minutes and see if we get some more participants. The conversation you might have heard was primarily between the co-hosts, Carol Sebastianski, Matt Ridgway, John Rent, and the directors of the CTC. And we're just getting organized. We use Zoom quite a bit for our board meetings, but this is the first time we've done a presentation to a larger group using Zoom. Okay, once again, this is John Rent. I'll call the meeting to order, the annual meeting of the Chemung Transportation Company. It's 9:03. I see that we have 29 participants. Thank you for attending. We're going to start by some brief discussion about using Zoom, and Carol Sebastianski will lead us in that.
Thank you, John. If your name is not on the screen, if you would change your name, most of you do have your actual name. It makes it easier for us to determine who wants to speak or whatever. And if there are two members of your household, for example, husband and wife, that are on the same screen, it would be preferred if you put both names there, just so we know both of you are there, but it's not required. You will have control of your video if it's on or off, and that's totally up to you. If you are speaking and you're having problems with us hearing you or breaking up and your video is on, it's probably a good idea to shut your video off. That usually helps with the audio. So Matt and I are the hosts that will be monitoring the participants. And you are muted as you join the meeting, and you will stay muted until we unmute you. So if you have a question, you're gonna raise your hand, and I'm gonna go over that in a second. We'll see your hand raised, and we will unmute you and tell John, whoever the speaker is, that this person has raised their hand so that they can ask the question or make the comment. And then after you speak, please mute yourself again, or I can mute you. So on the laptop, John, go back.
Am I there?
You went ahead. Is this the first? Okay. All right. Next slide, John. Okay. On your laptop, you see the yellow arrows trying to help you if you don't know how to raise your hand. And unfortunately, there are different configurations for different devices, so we're going to show you a few. But you can see the yellow arrow at the bottom that says participants. If you click that, you will see a list of participants. In this particular example, just Matt and myself with the participants. And then you'll see at the bottom either raise hand or three little dots that you click, and then it says raise hand. Raise hand in the bottom right. So that's what you do if you want to speak or ask a question. And then after you speak, you can lower your own hand, or I will lower it for you. Okay, and then let's look at the next example on the tablet. The example I have is you click on the three dots in the upper right-hand corner, and you can see with the blue line there, raise hand. That's how you do the same thing. And then finally, on your phone, again, it's the three dots. You click on those, and then it will have raise hand as an option. So I hope that's addressed most of what you guys are seeing. But whatever the configuration, you can find a raise hand choice, and that's again how you're recognized to speak.
Thank you, Carol. So we have called the meeting to order. This is the agenda for this morning. There'll be an explanation of the meeting structure. I'm going to introduce the directors and the staff. There'll be a treasurer's report, president's report, management report. There'll be nominations of directors, nomination for the clerk of the corporation. After the nominations, we will review the voting process for this year, which is different because we're doing this virtually. We'll open up the meeting up to other business, and then we will adjourn. So today is an informational meeting, and you're going to hear from reports made to the members. CTC board nominations for director and clerk will be made. No votes will be taken today. And again, we'll go through the detailed voting protocol, but votes can be mailed or delivered to the CTC office by August 25th. Carol just talked about if you want to speak, ask a question, or be recognized, how to raise your hand. What I would say is if somehow during the meeting you have trouble raising your hand, you're unable to, or you don't get recognized, and you have a question that didn't get asked or answered, you can submit that question to the CTC office by email, and we will make every attempt to answer it promptly. Voting protocol, again, will be discussed after the nominations. I'd like to introduce the directors who are present on the call. Spex Eaton is on the call, Pat Murray, Jeff Suma, Kendra McKinnon. I'm not sure whether John Burkett logged in or not. Lou Holman, John Martin, and Sue Stranahan. So the majority of the directors are present. I'd particularly like to thank Pat Murray and Spex Eaton. They are both leaving the board after the election on August 25th. I'd like to thank them for their service. Pat has been a great representative of the commuters in the community and has helped us enormously, specifically on purchasing and maintaining buses. And Spex has been on the board for many years, and for two of the last 3 years, he was a member of the executive committee, and he was very helpful to me providing CTC historical background and information. So thank you both for your service. In front of you, you should see a picture of the launch of the Independence, and a lot of our full-time dedicated crew is in that picture. And where would we be without our CTC employees? Year in, year out, they do a fantastic job. truly appreciate it. This year, it's unbelievable. All the extra effort that have gone into operating in the COVID-19 environment, the stress and strain of being on the front lines as essential workers. I absolutely want to thank them all. And there's a good picture of quite a few of them. I know Matt and Carol are on the line. I don't know what other employees are present at this meeting. And I'd specifically like to recognize Martha Hamilton Dowdy. Martha retired as our office manager at the end of 2019. Martha was with CTC from 2011 to 2019 and was a big part of significant changes in CTC, a lot of structure, a lot of written procedures, a lot of good controls, and a key part of helping organize the company and having the company we have today. So Martha, enjoy your retirement and thank you very much. Normally at an annual meeting, when you came into the meeting at the hall, you would have received a copy of last year's minutes and we would vote to approve those minutes. The minutes are available. You can read them on the Shebig website or print them off of the Shebig website. And if you go to the Shebig website and go to the Contact Us section, you'll find a member login prompt, and the password is Shebig. So you can get the minutes there. But also the minutes are outside the office on the porch in a plastic tote, and you can pick up the minutes there. The same is true of the treasurer's report. Identical process. The report, again, available online, or you can pick it up at the office. Okay, I am going to give the treasurer's report in an abbreviated format. So we're going to start by talking about income. This is a comparison of 2019 to 2018. And if you look at the bottom line total, basically identical. And identical across all the significant lines, ferry, barging, parking. The miscellaneous revenue is things like interest income, sale of merchandise like t-shirts or hats and those types of things. Expenses. 2019 expenses versus 2018 were up about $130,000 in 2019 versus 2018. A big portion of that is wages, benefits, and contract services. For several years, I'd say for the last previous 3 or 4 years, our expenses were very flat, including wages, benefits, and contract services. In 2019, we made several significant changes to compensation. We do a review of competitive compensation. And as you all know from reading the news and staying in touch with what's going on in the world, their wages and pays were quite flat for many years. 2019, unemployment rates were extremely low. And when we did a review, we saw that some of our compensation was out of line. So that increase, key areas, boat crew wages, the hourly rate was increased. Our bus driver hourly rate was increased. The boat crew's employment law is driven by maritime law, not normal worker state laws. And we were not required to pay overtime based on maritime law. We have started to pay overtime to the boat crews for hours over 40 hours. We added some afternoon shifts at the Cousins parking lot last summer, 2019. And the biggest change we made was, as you know, our boat crews, the captain and the deckhand, are on call 24/7 for rescues. This has always been a fundamental part of our crew's job duties. They were uncompensated for this in the past. In 2019, we started paying an on-call stipend. So if you're on call overnight when you're off duty, and you're a member of the boat crew, you now get paid $25 per on-call shift. So that alone added $18,000 to our wage and benefit cost. Net income 2019, $64,000 versus $188,000 the previous year, and driven by an increase in expenses that we just talked about. Here are our income statement trends from 2019. The yellowish line is income, and you can see a steady increase in income from a little less than $1.2 million to slightly over $1.2 million the last 2 years. As I said, expenses were flat 2015 through 2018, and we just talked about the increase in expenses for 2019. So you can see we've been profitable for 5 years in a row, and our profitability did drop last year based on an increase in expenses. Now I'm going to talk about our balance sheet. Balance sheet is composed of current assets, fixed assets, liabilities, and equity. We'll start by talking about current assets. Bottom line, our current assets at the end of 2019 were $1.1 million versus $887,000 in 2018. The top three lines are cash components. So you can see that we have, at the end of 2019, we had a significant amount of cash. The three cash components in the top three lines add up to $1.1 million. So we had $1,010,000 in cash. Other components of current assets are accounts receivable, inventory, and prepaid expenses. And prepaid expenses, I'm going to skip prepaid expenses. If you have questions about that, we'll have to do a little
bit. John?
Go ahead, Carol.
The prepaid expense is we decided to pay off the lease for the Route 1 parking lot a couple of years ago because we had the cash. So that's what that is.
Thank you. So we prepaid that lease, and then we adjust it on an annual basis based on what the annual lease payment would have been. Fixed assets, the next to the bottom line is the total fixed assets. So you see we're at $1,593,000 in 2019 versus $547,000 2018. There are two significant changes here. And so if we focus on the 2019 column, building went up $173,000. We purchased the 16 North Road office building in 2019. And then you see that equipment went from $1,448,000 to $2,358,000, and that is basically the acquisition of the Independence in 2019. So two major fixed asset additions, and that's driving the change of over $1 million in fixed assets. The total assets at the bottom of this page are the addition of the current assets, which we just looked at, and the fixed assets here. Liabilities and equity. Total liabilities, $1,446,000 versus $245,218. Again, this is driven by two significant changes: purchase of the office building and the acquisition of the Independence. So we have a mortgage on the office building of $194,000 at the end of 2019, and we have a loan to be repaid on the Independence of $960,000 at the end of 2019. So that's the big change in the liabilities. So total equity is $1,253,000 at the end of 2019 versus $1,189,000 at the end of 2018. So that's equivalent to if in your personal finances, what would your net worth be? So our total equity increased. So that's a sign of continued financial health for CTC. Here are the trends. You see the big jump in assets, again, the purchase of the office building and the Independence. The big jump in liabilities. We now have a mortgage on the office building and a commercial loan on the Independence, and a continued improvement trend in our equity. Okay, so as we said at the beginning of the meeting, we will take questions as we finish various segments of the report. So we'll open the floor to any questions about the treasurer's report.
Okay, John. So Jim, I just unmuted you, Jim. You had a question?
I do. Jim Van Fleet. Sorry, I didn't put my full name in there. But John, is particularly a propitious time, it seems to me, to be financing. Interest rates have never been lower. Did you get advantageous rates and financing situations there? It seems like a far, at such low cost of money to have retained cash, rainy day funds or whatever, seems like smart decision. Making. You want to run us through that? Thanks.
Sure. The mortgage that we have on the office building is a privately held mortgage, and the interest rate is around 4%. Today, if you look at mortgage rates, 30-year mortgage rates on homes, I think they're under 2%. They're at historic lows. CTC wouldn't necessarily be able to get that interest rate because it's a commercial office building. So 4% at the time we entered into it was a good rate considering it was a commercial loan. We may be able to do better, and I'll talk about that in a minute after I talk about the Independence loan. The Independence loan is a 10-year fixed rate with a 20-year amortization. The 10-year fixed rate is a little over 4%, 4.15. When we locked in that rate, at the time we did it, the bank that we're using, Bangor Savings Bank, was about 1% higher than that, and it wanted to increase our rate to over 5%. But we said, well, wait a minute, we thought we were locked in, and they agreed that we were locked in. So at that point in time, the 4.15 was a good rate. As you all know, there's lots of stimulus programs. There was a first round of stimulus programs, and there's talk about the second round of stimulus programs. In the first round of stimulus programs, there were two programs that CTC qualified for. One was PPP, the Payroll Protection Plan, and that was to be able to retain your employees and to continue to compensate your employees. We received just over $125,000 for that program, and we haven't completed the paperwork to finalize how much of it would be an outright grant versus how much of it would have to be repaid, but we are confident that at least $120,000 of that will be a grant. We also applied for a Small Business Administration loan that was part of this first stimulus program, and that gets us back to interest rates and financing. That Small Business Administration loan has a three-letter acronym. I can't remember what it is right now, but it basically was to provide long-term, low-interest money for businesses that had investments in equipment or had long-term loans. So that's still out there. We have applied. We've got an active number on a case, but we haven't heard what might be available there. But that's certainly something we want to pursue. Taking both of those long-term loans and perhaps over the short term taking advantage of a longer repayment time. Do we have any other questions?
No.
Okay. President's report, quite brief. 2019 activities or accomplishments. CTC over the last few years has spent a lot of time active with the town, attending the town selectmen's meetings, workshops, and other meetings on the Stone Pier and Sunset. Now that the town is focused on the Stone Wharf, we will continue to represent CTC's interest in whatever changes are made to the Stone Wharf. We talked about the purchase of the office. We took delivery of the Independence at the end of 2019. You all know the Independence arrived a lot later than we originally expected. A lot of work went into that by everybody on CTC, and Matt Ridgway is going to talk a little bit more about the Independence after this. We continue to have an excellent safety record. Safety is always our number one consideration at CTC, and again, Matt will speak more to that right after this. Any questions?
No, no questions.
Okay, I'll turn it over to Matt for the management report.
Okay, thanks, John. Okay, so like John said, we one of the big accomplishments for CTC in 2019 is we did take delivery of the Independence. It was at the very end of 2019, but it was still, you know, we just made it in 2019 and did take the boat. So some major features of the Independence that you guys may be aware of, likely are aware of, but she has significantly increased passenger capacity over the Islander. Of course, things are different currently with the social distancing requirements that were existing in now. But in normal times, the Islander can hold 102 passengers. The Independence will be able to carry 150 passengers. So it's a big increase. She is slightly larger, 4 feet longer, 2 feet wider, fairly significantly heavier. We do, the stern took up a lot of that space, so we are able to handle more freight. The wheelhouse is flush mounted on the upper deck. And it is the full width of the boat, so there's two steering stations. The visibility is tremendously improved over the Islander, both being able to see 360 degrees around the vessel. There's better visibility forward. There's a lot less obstructions between the windows. So, and then there's a lot better visibility down to the float and the deckhand and where passengers are exiting and entering. So it's, which is a major safety feature of the boat. So there is a vestibule on the main cabin exit that's sort of like the deckhand nook where the deckhand goes into and can be separate from the passengers as they're getting ready to step off of the boat and tie the boat up. All the deckhands feel a lot more comfortable, you know, being a little bit removed from the passengers. There's better passenger control on the Independence, where we don't have people, you know, exiting the boat before we're ready to have them exit the boat. The Independence is equipped with a bathroom or a head. We do have fresh water tank on board, which has been really great for the crew. And we expect to, again, during normal times, have that, at least seasonally, have that head accessible. There is safer access to the upper deck. For those of you that have been running the boat over the past couple months, we have been able to open the upper deck. We got into discussions with the Coast Guard about opening the upper deck without having an upper deck hand, which typically is a requirement. That did come with a limitation that they put on us where we can only carry 32 passengers total with upper deck open without an upper deck hand. But one of the reasons we were able to do that was because the stairs going to the upper deck are really stairs. It's not a ladder like on the Islander. I know it's been a long time since most of you guys have been on the Islander. I think the next time that you go on the Islander and you look at those stairs, you're going to be fairly shocked at the difference. The upper deck is accessible from the wheelhouse, and that's another you know, feature that's really good, and we didn't anticipate the benefit that we're getting out of it now, where that was another requirement that the Coast Guard had for us to be able to have the upper deck open without an upper deck hand. So that's been really, it worked out really great. There is state-of-the-art navigation equipment on board. Our route is short, as you guys know, but we do make that crossing in all kinds of weather. So it is really important for us to have, you know, at least industry standards, and we're in really good shape with that on the Independence. There is a fixed fire suppression system in the engine room, which is an upgrade over the Islander. One of the requirements that we had, obviously, knowing the area where we operate, we certainly didn't want a boat that was going to be any deeper draft than the Islander. So the Independence and the Islander both draw about 5.5 feet, depending on how much fuel and or passengers or freight are on board. But the draft is basically identical, as is the fuel consumption, which is a pretty big achievement considering the additional capacity that we're able to carry on the Independence. So we're pretty pleased with that. I would say that all the reports that I've gotten from the captains, you know, we all worked on this together, and while she certainly isn't perfect, the rollout and everybody getting used to her has been, you know, really kind of smooth as we could hope for, and been pretty happy with her so far. Any questions on the Independence? Yeah, I don't see any. Okay, so CTC continues to focus on safety. That's our number one priority always. Some of the ways that we do that is we try to, we are kind of in a tiny world here. So we try to get out of that tiny world and see what's going on in the bigger world and to keep up with best practices with safety in the industry. So we typically participate in a couple passenger vessel association, which is our trade group, events throughout the course of the year. So we sent a captain or a couple of captains to a regional passenger vessel association conference and a couple to the national conference. And we've been doing that the past few years. We also always participate in the Coast Guard Industry Day, which is held locally in the station in South Portland. We always exceed the number of required drills. Those drills include man overboard, fire, abandoned ship. We do other drills as we make them up. And we try to have fun with it and make sure that the crew is all prepared for the unlikely event that something happens. We have regular crew meetings. Some of the things that have come up during the crew meetings in 2019 was to standardize guidelines kind of across the board for our limitations running in inclement weather. And we also discussed and put in protocols for when we wouldn't run the boat due to unsafe access to the boat. For example, astronomical high tides during storm conditions that, you know, put 6 inches or a foot of water over the stone pier. We talked about, you know, not running the boat, not only when it's not safe to run the boat, but when it's not safe for passengers to get on the boat. So we have a lot of good crew meetings that focus on safety. We've had continued successful Coast Guard safety inspections on both ferries. They're both, our two passenger ferries are inspected annually. We had the 5-year certificate of inspection this year on the Islander, which she passed with flying colors. The crew regularly receives CPR and hazmat training. So it looks like I lost the PowerPoint. I don't know if anybody else did. Yeah. Yeah, I can bring it. Okay. I get back to where. Okay, so John, I just got a text from John. He lost his internet connection, so.
I'm back now, Matt.
Okay, John. I think. Yeah, if you could get the slideshow back up, right? I can do that too if you want.
Yeah, I lost my screen share. Mm-hmm. Great.
Okay, I can do that, I think.
Okay. Everybody sees a look at 2020?
No.
Can you see that?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, can you guys see the focus on safety now?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so the PowerPoint is now on my, I'm sharing it, so.
Okay, and with you sharing, Matt, I can't see any, I don't have any controls, I can't see anybody, but if you go to the first slide on focus on 2020, that would be helpful.
Well, I think he's got some more to report on. John.
Okay, all right.
I did, yeah. Yeah, so, one thing that we accomplished this year, and it was more of an individual accomplishment, one of our captains, one of our captains is now certified to train in CPR and first aid, which is tremendously helpful. We don't have to go off the island or get anybody outside to do it for us. We're continuing to work with the town on safer passenger access to the ferry, exploring things like longer ramps that would make it a little bit easier for some of our passengers to access the boat and safer. So that's That's the focus on safety. And any questions so far? Okay.
No questions.
Okay, so our service report. We carried 145,000, just about 800 passengers in 2019, which was almost 11,000 less than in 2018. Our number of scheduled ferry trips was 3,993. We barged 918 vehicles, which was an increase of 4 over 2018, so very similar. Number of passengers carried on the bus was 49,921. Which was almost 4,300 passengers less than in 2018. And our buses ran around 50,000 miles in 2019. One of the things that we continue to work on is our communication programs. So our website received 50,748 visits in 2019. On Facebook, we're up to 805 followers. A new thing that we started this year, we got CTC on Instagram. Amanda Campbell has been really working on improving our social media presence and kind of trying to bring CTC as a company into, you know, the modern age for that sort of thing. She certainly knows a lot more about it than I do. And she's done a pretty good job. So we'll continue to try to work on that and get more stuff on there. Our email and text program for notice to customers, we have 925 subscribers. This program is really successful. It's really important for us to be able to communicate when we do have expected or unexpected cancellations. For example, if there's routine mechanical work that necessitates us to take a boat out of service, we can get that out, with hopefully as much notice as possible. But if a sudden weather event requires us to cancel trips, this is a great service where we can get that message out to a lot of people all at once. So if you guys are interested on signing up for this, it's a really good thing to be part of, and you can find information on the website on that. We publish, so another thing that we've been able to do with that email text program, which you guys may be aware, you may have seen some of the text come through, but we are working with a town during this COVID pandemic on getting notices from them out to our list too, because we do have kind of that broad list of subscribers. So that's been pretty successful, and hopefully the town and you guys have found that helpful. We do publish a monthly newsletter on the island calendar, which includes news on what's going on with CTC. It also includes our assistance schedule, and now will include the trips that we are not able to assist with access for passengers that need assistance, or trips that are not going to be run because extreme low tides. So we do that monthly. We post regularly on shebig.org, and we continue to maintain bulletin board on both ferries and continue to work on our signage on the boats, buses, and at both parking lots, especially now trying to keep up with all the changes. I see Michael Grunko has a hand up, and I'll ask to unmute. So, Michael, you should be able to unmute yourself at this point, I think.
There we go. Okay. Is that it?
You got it.
Thank you. On the trips that you're going to have to skip because of very low tides, it would be nice if you could use your email text mechanism to go ahead and remind people the day before and maybe the day of those abandoned trips. Seeing them on the calendar is a help, but you know, we all sort of operate with the CTC as an absolutely basic utility that's always there for us. So those days that you can't be there, those trips that you can't be there, it would be good if you took that, use that mechanism. Thank you.
Yeah, that's an excellent suggestion. Thank you, Michael. Any other questions or comments before we go forward?
Matt, if I could, David Hill here. I just wanted to thank the CTC on behalf of the town of Chabig Island and the residents of Chabig Island for that communications link, which I think is critical at this time. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so we'll continue on here, and I'll turn it back over to John for a look at 2020.
Thanks, Matt. Somehow I can't see anything on Zoom and I have no Zoom controls. So I'm going to have to ask you to advance the slides and hopefully you can all hear me okay.
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. So we're going to take a look at 2020. And hopefully we have a slide up that starts with what a year?
Yes.
Okay. So, Matt Ridgway was promoted to assistant general manager, and you just all heard from Matt, and he's doing has always done a fantastic job on the maritime side of our operations, and he's getting more involved with general management and the land side of our operations, the buses and the parking lots. And we're pleased to have Scott Martin join us as our new office manager. And I know that many people in the community have had a chance to talk to Scott, lining up barging or buying tickets, which you had to do through calling the office for a long time. So Scott has had a chance to talk to many, many people in the Chabig community. And everything I hear from people is Scott is easy to work with and is doing a great job. So hopefully one of these days soon, Scott will be able to do the normal office manager work as opposed to the COVID-19 support work. In 2020, our current highest priorities are continued ferry and bus operations that safely meet the needs of the community. And we're going to talk about what those operations are today on a follow-up slide. We are dedicated to improved and transparent communications with the town, with the Chabig Island Fire Department, and with the community. Matt just talked about communications. A lot of those are the formal communications, but we need to make sure that those communications are stronger than ever with the town and the fire department. We continue to work on ferry access with the town. You all know that CTC has proposed an option of 80-foot ramps to address the steep ramp problem, and that's being actively worked on with the town. There's money in the budget to do studies there, and Carol has been asked by the town to do some a specific investigation of 80-foot ramps. We have the new low tide restrictions, and that's been communicated broadly to the town and to the community. We're currently working on rescue transport protocols. The captains, the crews, absolutely believe that it is not appropriate to have passengers on all types of rescues. So in the near future, you'll be hearing about certain rescues will not be accomplished with passengers on board. And the criteria for communicating that between the fire department and the ferry is being established now, and more to come on that. You all know we had insurance issues when it came to COVID-19 rescue. We are closely monitoring COVID-related insurance industry changes. Our CTC's insurance policy, it renews at the end of the year. There will be changes with respect to COVID, and we're keeping an eye on that. I'm going to provide some highlights about COVID-19 impact on CTC. We're going to talk about staffing, operational, and financial. Can you all see the COVID-19 slide?
Yes.
Okay. Staffing impact. Shortly after operations were impacted by COVID, we lost 5 employees, either due to resignation or being on leave because of the COVID. 3 boat employees, 2 mainland employees. That's 20% of our employees. Operational impact. You all know we have significantly reduced ferry and bus trips. Passenger counts have been reduced on both the ferry and the buses for social distancing. Our crews are regularly disinfecting the ferry and the buses. Early on, we suspended bus service for several weeks. There are year-round residents that park at Route 1 without the bus service. We worked hard to make sure that they could have cars on Cousins Island. Alice and Peter Mellon were very, very generous and allowed cars to be parked on their property on Wharf Road. So we thank Alice and Peter for that. And some people did move their cars from Cousins, cars that they weren't going to use. Perhaps some, a very few year-round residents have 2 cars because of 2 working people, commuters, island businesses, and some of those people were able to move one of their cars to Route 1. So that's how we try to support people who needed to move a car from Route 1 to Cousins. We suspended ticket sales for several weeks, so that was because of the concern with social distancing between the deckhands and the passengers on the boat and maintaining social distancing. New tickets, where 1 ticket per trip is able to be pulled out of a booklet, new ticket procedures and way to use those tickets when you get on the ferry were implemented. Just recently, rather than calling the office, you can now purchase tickets online and they're available for you when you get to the ferry. We have new bus procedures. I think many of you know that the bus is restricted to 9 seats for social distancing. Early on, we offered free barging service for people that needed to leave the island for COVID-19 testing. Hopefully that won't be needed now that we have a testing procedure up and running on the island. We offered discount barge service for the quarantine so that people coming from away that needed to quarantine for 2 weeks could most safely come to the island, complete their quarantine, and return their car to the mainland. We developed a method for transporting the COVID-19 rescue patients that met the CDC guidelines, met the procedures that the Chabig Island Fire Department wanted to have in place, needed to have in place, and met the needs of the CTC crews. If you look on our website, you'll be able to see the more than 25 informational bulletins that have been put out about CTC procedures, and many, many of those were put out with respect to COVID-19 CDC protocols.
John, it looks like we have a question from Alice in Paradise. So I'm going to ask her to unmute.
Hello, everyone. My question was, I may have missed it earlier, about the noise towards the front of the new boat. There's a lot of noise if you sit in the front of the boat. I don't know if that can be adjusted.
I'll let Matt address that.
Sure. Yeah. It's certainly one of the things we're not super happy with the new boat. And I don't think there's really great easy solutions. We have looked at replacing some of the ceiling tiles with acoustical sound absorbing tiles. Before we took delivery of the boat, we attempted to rectify it somewhat by doubling the amount of insulation, sound insulation between the engine room and the deck of the main cabin. And you know, we'll continue to try to work on it. So, I guess that's the best answer I can give you right now, Allison.
Thanks, Matt. You see any other questions out there?
No.
Okay. Financial impact of COVID-19. Do you all see that slide?
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a comparison here of passengers and revenue from January through July and from April through July. And the two time frames are there because January and February was normal, pre-COVID, and then April through July is all COVID. So January through July, ferry passengers were down 53%, but if you come into the total COVID impact and summer peak period, ferry passengers are down 72%. Similar numbers with the buses, down 70%, down 83%, and they continue to be down 83%. So total revenue year to date is down 41%, January through July, and that's a negative net income change of $451,000. I want to speak more about the financial impact as we go forward and kind of set the stage in these unprecedented times. So we started 2020 from a strong financial position. I told you when we reviewed the balance sheet that we started the year with just over $1 million in cash. Okay. At the end of July 2020, we had $650,000 in cash. In a typical year, we lose cash early in the year. With normal Chibig resident transport back and forth, no barging, limited visitors, we lose money every year early in the year. So we do go through some cash. So at the end of July, we had $650,000 in cash. This was $108,000 less than the previous year at the end of July. Cash at the end of this year, 12/31/2020, should exceed $500,000. This cash should last into 2022. This cash should get us through all the remainder of this year and all of next year. You'll notice that the word should are bold. We update our forecasts every month. The board spends a lot of time every month talking about expenditures, income statement, balance sheet, and cash forecasts. None of us know what the economy is going to do or what's going to be normal next month, at the end of the year, or next spring, but those are our best projections as of now. Having said this, management actions to preserve cash are critical. In these uncertain times, CTC, like most businesses, is doing everything and will do everything possible to to ensure continued operations. Management actions that we're taking to ensure our financial security. We've adjusted our operations to comply with COVID protocols. We're staying up to date with stimulus programs and applying for these benefits. I talked about the fact that we were able to take advantage of the PPP program. We have applied for an SBA program that may provide longer-term, lower interest rate financing. We keep abreast of what's in the stimulus discussions, and our main senators, King and Collins, were part of putting in one of the Senate stimulus programs, provisions to support private transportation companies. And that was originally targeted at private bus companies that support public schools. But they added to that, our senators added to that private ferry companies. So there's a program that potentially could help Casco Bay Lines and CTC. But whether that will ever come to fruition or not, but that's the type of program we keep an eye on. As you know, we've reduced schedules, and we will continue to reduce and or adjust schedules to minimize costs while meeting the essential community transportation needs. We've minimized scheduled work hours. We've eliminated discretionary spending. We have and will investigate options to reduce debt repayment costs, looking for longer-term loans at lower interest rates, and we will investigate all options for revenue increase. Barging has been close to normal this year, and a part of that was more people barging their cars over to be able to quarantine and to minimize their travel on the ferry. We will absolutely be looking at optimizing, maximizing barging revenue in future years. We will, as we do every year, look at all the fares that are charged and understand what adjustments may need to be made with fares. The Islander came back from extensive maintenance. I guess it was June, it might have been May. The board talked about, are there any charter opportunities? Well, this year, there really weren't any charter opportunities, but we'll continue to look for charter opportunities, either for the Islander or for the Independents. Unprecedented times, I'm appreciative of how seriously the board and management has taken continuing operations, doing the right thing for the employees, the safe thing for employees and the community. And we were very, very fortunate to have started with an extremely strong cash position. Are there any questions before we go back to the rest of the agenda?
I don't see any questions, John.
Okay. The remainder of the agenda will be a report of the nominating committee. Then we'll make sure everybody understands how to vote, other business, and adjournment. So with that, I will turn it over to Susan Stranahan, who was on the nominating committee, to make some nominations.
Thank you, John. On behalf of the nominating committee, I would like to nominate for 3-year terms John Rent and Jeff Suma, as well as Lou Holman as clerk of the corporation.
Susan?
Yeah.
This is Kendra. I'd like to second that motion.
Thank you, Kendra.
Okay, so those nominations have been moved and seconded. I would open the floor for discussion. Matt or Carol, do you see any hands raised?
No.
No hands. No.
Okay. Could I have a motion to close the nominations?
I'd move to close the nominations.
And a second?
I will second that. This is Kendra.
Okay. If anyone has an objection to that, if they would raise their hand.
No, none.
Seeing no objections, we will move on and we'll discuss voting. So this meeting will conclude on August 25th at 4 p.m. And it will conclude with a counting of the votes. And so all the members, as members, you have the ability to vote by mailing in either a proxy or a ballot, one or the other, either mailing it in or delivering it to the CTC office by August 25th at 4 p.m. And you're able to vote for approval of the annual meeting minutes, approval of the treasurer's report, election of two CTC directors, and election of the CTC clerk. All members have been provided a ballot and a proxy by mail, okay? If you have misplaced yours or don't have yours, you can go to the CTC website and print out another one. You can request one from the office. You could make a copy of someone else's ballot. Now, each ballot or proxy that was mailed had the member's name and address on it. So if you copied somebody else's, you would have to cross out their name and address and insert your own. Ballots or proxies must be received by 4 p.m. on August 25th. Write-in nominations can be made on the ballot. CTC must receive written notice from the write-in candidate that she or he is willing to serve on the board by 4 p.m. on 8/25. So on 8/25, the president of CTC, the clerk of the corporation, and the office manager are going to meet at the CTC office, and we are going to count the votes. And shortly after the votes are counted, that we will post the results for the community. Are there any questions about the voting process?
Not seeing any.
Okay, I would open the floor to other business. Anything anyone else would like to bring forward at the annual meeting?
I'm seeing Michael Grunko with his hand up, asking him to unmute.
Hi there. I just had a question. It's hardly, you know, highly important at this point, but I thought about the possibility, and I don't have an electric car, but about putting an electric charging station at the Route 1 or the Cousins Island lot for people as they acquire those vehicles to make use of that. Has there been any thought about that? Thank you.
Yes, Michael. There have been a couple other members of the community that have reached out to CTC management and the CTC board about electric vehicles and the eventual need for charging stations. And I believe that at least one of those individuals plans to put together a proposal and bring that before the CTC board sometime in the next few months. So, and CTC, we've done a little investigation. We've talked to Revision Energy, who's in that marketplace, about concepts, policies, procedures, how one could most cost effectively get started. So yeah, it's a subject that's, let's say, on the strategic planning board.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions?
Yeah, we're having a question from Jim, who I've asked to unmute.
It's not so much a question, John, it's a comment. I had the occasion when we were going through the Yarmouth Town Council process of getting the extra barging trips for COVID operations to have been a participant in some of that in the town of Yarmouth. And as a result, I had frequent interactions with your executive committee. I just want to compliment the executive committee and the management for a really tough environment in which you're operating right now, and to have maintained the general continuity of our service and kept as many people safe as you have is appreciated by those both on both sides of the water. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jim. Anything else?
I just wanted to say, this is David Hill again, I just wanted to say that this meeting came off pretty well, all things considered, and I appreciate and applaud the board, and would like to mention that we had, including board members, a total of 42 people, which I'd say is roughly equivalent to what we would do in the hall.
Thank you, David. So the next item on the agenda would be adjournment, and I'd like to make one final comment before we go there. And again, thank all the CTC employees, frontline essential workers who have made it possible to provide the safe, reliable operations that we've had during this pandemic. And I'd like everyone to thank them when you see them. Please thank them and be respectful and kind. They're on the front lines. It's a stressful environment for everybody. If you have concerns, questions, complaints, the first place to go is to our general manager, Carol Sebastianski, and we will try to be responsive to those. But be kind to our frontline CTC employees.
And we do have another hand up, Jim's internet iPad. And I'm not seeing a microphone on him, so I'm not sure how to handle that.
I don't think you can.
Okay. Oh, there he is. Yeah, so I've asked him to unmute. He's got a microphone now, so.
Yep.
Hello?
Can you hear us?
We can hear you.
I've had my hand. This is my father using. Hold on a second here. I got to turn this down.
You talking through yours?
Yeah. Anyway, my hand's been raised through the whole meeting for a couple different parts.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, hold on.
Could you identify yourself, please?
Sure. This is Jonathan Camlosi and James Camlosi.
Okay, Jonathan, we can hear you. It sounds like you might have two devices going. If you do, if you'd kill one, it might be a better quality audio. But
right. Yeah, we just did.
All right.
First of all, is there a a priority or use for the barge, because we're not seeing the barge. We're only seeing the barge going on the designated days according to the 76 barging accord. But can revenue be raised using the barge going for other business? I'm just wondering, because I think I remember the CTC board voting for essential routes versus any business that the barge might be hired for. And I think that, I mean, the original board members and the original use of the barge from the very first, when it was first purchased and utilized, was to simply create revenue to lower the ticket prices for the passenger ferry. And I think it would be important, considering the loss of revenue, that the barge be used in any way possible, so that it can contribute to revenue to keep the ticket prices low.
I think we'll let Matt answer that. He actually was on a little trip yesterday.
Sure, yeah. So the last like probably 3 years, 4 years, Martha and I in the office, and then now Scott and I have really worked to increase exactly what you're talking about, Jonathan. When somebody calls about barging and it's reasonable, meaning that it's like somewhere near in the vicinity of Casco Bay and not somebody requesting a barge trip to Greenland or something, our first answer is usually yes, we can do that. Let's figure out how.
Volume down. Hmm? How do you turn the volume? Anyway, so, go ahead.
Yeah, so we have increased our barging outside of just the Cousins to Chebig route. We've done a lot of barging out to Boston's Island from Yankee, Reno. We have a good relationship with a contractor out there. There's another island contractor that we've done considerable barging for. In fact, we have a well drilling truck out on Crab Island right now. We're looking to move out to Lower Goose, and we've worked with those guys quite a bit. We are restricted by tide, which is a major restriction that only allows us to barge, around 3 or 4 hours a day, depending on where we're going to. But absolutely, that's any income that this company can get that is outside of this community, I think is great for this company and this community. So we pursue that as much as possible, and certainly would love to see that part of the business grow, and we continue to work on that.
Okay, well, that's great to hear. The other question I had was, why is it that if, and this is not directed just at Matt, but I'm just wondering why there's a report to the Coast Guard on a lower low tide. It's a grounding generally occurs when there's an error, but not when there's a, if it's a regular, you know, if the boat's at the float and it's near or on the bottom, I'm just wondering, is the intent to put pressure on the town to dredge, or I just wasn't sure what the purpose of that was. Making excessive reports to the Coast Guard can actually generate a lot of trouble. So I wasn't sure what the intent or purpose, and that's not just a question to Matt. I was just wondering in general, I saw that in the last letter.
So Matt is the most qualified to answer that, because he's regularly talking to the Coast Guard and he's very up to date with the regulations. So we'll turn it back to Matt.
Yeah, so Jonathan, I'll try to answer your question as I understand you asking it. We're not talking about reporting to the Coast Guard for times that the boat may be aground at the float, or what we're talking about is if we were underway and went aground in a situation where we had to back off the mud and then continue on our way, or we had a situation where we were operating in shallow water and we got somebody had accidentally dropped a string of traps off the commercial float and they got fouled in our propeller and we lost propulsion. As you know, those are incidents that we would have to report to the Coast Guard as a, you know, anytime you lose propulsion or you have a grounding that you have to back off of like that, that's a reportable marine casualty. And I have had discussions with the Coast Guard because they have offered whatever assistance they can to try to push the Army Corps of Engineers on this dredging project that the town has been working on. So I have had sort of detailed discussions about what they would be looking for. If we did have a what they call a soft grounding, where you're able to back off, likely they wouldn't have us fill out a 2692, but it's sort of their prerogative. And you know, we definitely, while we don't want to be over enthusiastic in reporting, we certainly as a company stay above board and are completely transparent with the Coast Guard.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just as far as dredging, I mean, obviously the basin's filled in over time, which is why you have the 10-year renewal of the dredging licenses. But it's also, I mean, in the past, it wasn't uncommon for CTC to come in, put the bow into the float, and come ahead on the engines and blow the basin out. That's legal. You can, if you're not removing sediment and you're moving it back to where it was dredged originally, maintenance of that channel in that regard is absolutely possible. So I mean, some of this is like CTC can maintain on its own. I mean, there's a certain degree of so that channel can be utilized. And so I just don't see necessarily canceling boats unneedfully just because it's a super low tide. I think that there's some leeway there. Cause I know that the boats have been used in the past to blow out the basin. And sure. The same with barging.
Yeah. So I think that our operation keeps that basin open and it keeps that channel open for sure. Just our normal operation. What we have found is when we went out and sounded, and we've been concerned about it for, I think I first started hearing concerns from one of our captains, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. And this year we actually went out and sounded all over the channel, and actually where the ferry sits is one of the deepest spots in the channel, right along that float. You start to get off of the commercial float and then out, like right to the end of the wave break there is where we saw our lowest soundings. And at an extreme low tide, you know, if we were operating at like a -2, -2.2 foot low tide, we probably were operating, you know, we took the soundings at a -1.4 tide and extrapolated for a -2.2. We're operating with maybe 2 or 3 inches underneath the boat, which we found with all the captains were in agreement that was unacceptable. So I think that you're right. You know, 10 years, 12 years, CTC, you know, continue to operate, can keep that channel open. We're on over 20 years now since the channel's been dredged. And we certainly don't want to inconvenience our passengers or interrupt our business. But we also have to make maintaining our operation, our continuity of operation, our availability for rescues and make sure that we're not putting our equipment or in jeopardy. So that's kind of how that decision was made, Jonathan.
No, I understand that. I'm just saying that there are ways to maintain it so that you can blow top sediment out without any restrictions. And I mean, you go up the Mississippi River and you actually run through sludge, which is the bottom, and depending on the depths and the certain areas. I mean, I can tell you countless times where you might dock a vessel up in Savannah and put the bow up into the mud to get alongside, and that's just the way it is. So, I mean, I'm just saying that obviously it'd be nice to dredge to some deeper levels so there's no restriction. I think that can be addressed in the future. and certainly a hope for better, improved, I mean, actually a real plan from Army Corps based on CTC and town input, so that, you know, they can provide the best, you know, going forward, the best dredging plan for the island, so that we have better use all around. I'd certainly also hope that CTC pushes for a 24-hour access to the barge landing with a large, deeper channel, and that includes blasting ledge, because I know Army Corps can blast ledge because I've seen them do it in multiple ports and multiple locations all across the country. And that doesn't mean right next to the stone pier. That could mean 40 feet away from the stone pier, so that there's no impact to the ledge or the foundations of the existing stone wharf. But Army Corps can do a lot of things, including blasting ledge, and they can move that channel and move it further up towards the barge landing, if not past the barge landing. So anyway, but I appreciate all of CTC's efforts in that regard. I just didn't, I mean, I like I said, I there is some maintenance that CTC can do just by blowing out the channel bow into the floats. That's not uncommon in a lot of places. But anyway, thank you all. I just wanted to address that.
Thanks, Jonathan. I appreciate it. We do have another hand up. It looks like Donna Damon. And I'll ask her to unmute.
I just wanted to weigh in on where we are with the dredging, just to inform the community. In 2009, we knew we were ready for our 10-year upgrade in dredging. And we started talking with the Army Corps, and they put us into this program that was supposed to be very expedient and save us a lot of money, and with the federal government. Here we are in 2020, 11 years later, and we still haven't dredged. We did, thanks to some efforts by David Hill and Shelley Pingree's office, we have actually gotten some information that I can tentatively share with the community, that our, first of all, when we got into the program, we were going to have to pay 10% of the cost. Now it's 20% of the cost. And in addition, there's a huge issue about eelgrass, which we had never had to deal with before. So we're looking at an estimated cost a little less than $400,000 as of right now. And this is very preliminary information. We hope to get this fine-tuned. Right now we have 100,000 because that's what we were told 11 years ago we would need. So it's a moving target. We're trying to work on it. And as I said, that information just came to us in the last 2 days about the eelgrass. And they give us a choice of mitigating it by paying money to the state or requiring everyone who has a mooring to put in a conservation mooring. The board hasn't even had a chance to talk about this because it's such new news. So just putting that out there for the community to be thinking about, and it's definitely something that's got to be done. But anyway, that's where we are. It's not CTC's fault that it's not dredged. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Thanks, Donna. Matt or Carol, you see any other questions?
No.
Okay. Could I have a motion to adjourn?
I move to adjourn.
And a second? I guess everybody wants to stay.
Let me unmute Kendra.
I will second the motion to adjourn.
Anyone opposed, raise your hand, please.
All set, John.
Okay. Well, thank you all for attending this meeting. Hopefully, we'll see you in person in July next year.
Thanks, John.
Thanks.
Thank you, everyone.
So I don't know how. I don't know what happened. I could still be on